Welcome to Recovery Rocks, where we talk about all things recovery and music. I'm Tawny.
And I'm Lisa, and we're really glad you're here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Recovery Rocks. I'm Lisa, here with my sober goddess, Potus.
Y soy Tawny.
Yes.
I'm learning Spanish, so I'm trying to incorporate it where I can.
Oh, please do. Please do. I'm trying to improve my French, so I might
Perfect.
Try that as well. So we wanted to talk today about a pretty important subject, and that is sort of food issues. We've got a lot to say about food. And it is, at the outset, I will say something I've been struggling with lately, which is sort of one of my, food is sort of probably my most go-to struggle in terms of ongoing in sobriety. Food really, when we think about it, or when I think about it, is the first substance that I abused. I went through, until I got sober, I did not realize I had not yet been diagnosed with major depressive disorder and anxiety. And, you know, I think much of my addiction from there on in was related to self-medicating those mental health disorders, those chemical imbalances in my brain. And early on, food was the substance that that I found helped. You know, I was a kid who was, you know, uncomfortable in my own skin and gloomy and angsty and certainly fearful of everything. And I found early on that food somehow comforted me and made some of those feelings disappear, at least for a while. I didn't realize when I was, you know, an 8-year-old huffing a box of Yodels that what I was really doing was getting a dopamine hit from the sugar in my brain, and that that's what was giving me the relief. But I know that now. And so, you know, it is food is absolutely a substance that we can use in a self-medicating kind of way. And I think a lot of us are doing that in our various, in various forms during, certainly through 2020 and ongoing. And I just kind of want to raise my hand and say, this is something that I have been struggling with in particular lately. And it is, it goes back for me to a lot of body image issues and all of those kinds of things. But in particular, I think during the pandemic, when we have been able to control so little, food is something that I have been trying to control, seeking to control. And somehow if I could, you know, I've gone to, as maybe some others have as well, I've gone in the past to Overeaters Anonymous, which is a 12-step program relating to food. And they labeled me as what is called a restrictor, meaning that I gain my power over, you know, my particular exercise of this issue, the way it manifests itself in me is really sharply restricting what I eat and how I eat and when I eat and all that. And I've noticed, I gotta say, during the pandemic that I've been doing it. And it's good that I can say, okay, I see what I'm doing and I recognize it and I talk about it and I can try to not do that. But it is hard for me to say, and I'm working, you know, I'm getting better, like, But to say, to allow myself to have certain food. And what it looks like my restricting is a real kind of regimentation. There are really specific things that I will and will not eat at this point. And it is, you know, I eat really healthy stuff. I definitely do that. But I have a hard time enjoying and indulging in stuff, and I shouldn't feel guilty about these things, and I can do it. Like, I know I'm talking about this in, because I think it's important for me to say it out loud as somebody, you know, in long-term sobriety that these issues still come up, and I'm able to say, okay, you know, use my tools and you know, get through it. Like, okay, why am I telling myself, you know, I can't have a dessert tonight? Is that because I'm full? Is it because I'm, you know, I've been eating a lot of sweets and they haven't been agreeing with me? Or is it because I'm trying to control something and deprive myself of something, and somehow that makes me feel like I have some control over my life at a very out of control time in life? And, you know, in that sense, I can use food, you know, it's a substance, it's a drug to me in a certain sense. So I know we're going to talk a little bit more about our post-pandemic life, but I am having anxiety about going back out into the world and being, you know, I can control everything here. It's in my kitchen. Like we don't really do much takeout at all. And we don't go out to restaurants yet. So it is literally all under my control. And that's not necessarily the healthiest place for it to be. You know, before I would be traveling, I'd be on planes, I'd be, you know, going out meeting friends and doing whatever. And I was much looser and less, you know, less focused on food as an issue. It's in my brain again. It's taking up space in my brain again. And that's what I need, what I'm trying to work on. So
yeah,
what does that mean to you, Tawny?
Well, first of all, thank you for sharing all of that, because that is huge. Like, it's, you are totally not alone. I am right there with you, struggling with that. And I know a lot of other people are. And, you know, when someone shares what they're going through so vulnerably, it definitely makes others feel heard. And I definitely feel heard and seen in everything you just said. I struggle with that too. And to add to that, you know, I have a tendency to what you were saying, where like, oh, I'm not having dessert tonight because, and you have these, you know, situational answers. I often throw in, I'm going to work out an extra time this week because,
totally.
And that, you know, that's something where I do have, you know, I probably have an unhealthy relationship with food at times. I think I have an unhealthier relationship with exercise.
Yes, I totally understand that.
That's, you know, something that I've been physically active since my, you know, mid-20s. I, you know, in my past life, I was a Zumba instructor, Lisa, you know this.
Yeah.
And so I taught Zumba like 4 or 5 times a week. And then I would go get margaritas right after in my sweaty Zumba clothes. And, but I was, you know, teaching 4 or 5 times a week, doing boot camp in the mornings, choreographing, you know, always coming up with new routines. I was constantly exercising for 5 years. Like, that was my life for 5 years. And it's definitely toned down quite a bit, but I've noticed it's kind of like with drinking, where it's like, you don't have to drink every day to have a drinking problem, right?
Right.
It's the same thing where it's like, I don't exercise every day. And I know my relationship with exercise is unhealthy because it's conditional of, well, you know, you had dessert 3 times, you had 3 pieces of chocolate, so you're going to go for a run tomorrow.
Right.
And it's
totally.
So it's like, I exercise probably 3-4 times a week, which is quote healthy. But when you look at like a lot of my reasoning is not necessarily healthy. So I am right there with you. And I'm reading a book right now called Hooked that just came out. I can't remember the author's name, but it's the same guy that wrote Salt, Sugar, Fat.
Oh, right, like right, right. Oh, I have to say one thing though, that just before I forget, you walking out of the Zumba class and going for margaritas just totally made me think of all the times I would go on like these long runs or go to the gym for like 2 hours, get in my car, light up a cigarette, go home and crack a beer.
Oh my God. That's so real.
Like that was normal. That was all time.
It's so funny. Like, I loved my Zumba girls. Like, there would be some that would show up a couple minutes early and smoke a cigarette and then go into the class.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, do your thing. Like, you know, it was just this understanding of like, we're all imperfect people and we all have our shit going on, but we're going to come together a couple times a week and we're going to dance to Pitbull. Yeah. And, you know, And it was just like, it was like this therapeutic experience for all of us. Yeah. It was just my mom was in the front row of every class. Like, it was, we could do a whole episode on my Zumba life.
Okay, tell us about the book. Tell us about Hooked. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm reading Hooked by, I just Googled Michael Moss. And it is about what, like what you're talking about, like experiencing the dopamine from eating yodels as a kid. How processed food is literally designed to be addictive. And I'm not going to be of those like crunchy granola hippies that's going to tell you not to eat processed food. I'm like eating jelly beans while reading this book. Don't get me wrong. But it's just interesting to learn the science behind how these foods are created. And like they talk about scientific studies of people getting into these MRI machines and, like they'll drop, like the scientist will like drop a piece of chocolate on their tongue while it dissolves while they're in the MRI and watch their serotonin just go off completely. In the same way that like, you know, giving someone cocaine in an MRI. It's the same.
Can you imagine being in the tube and doing blow? Like, just I know. Like, I would flip out in the MRI tube, jacked up.
I know.
But, yeah.
But it's like, it really is fascinating to think about it like that, where, you know, even still, if you tell someone that you have a food eating disorder or addiction to food or disordered eating habits, whatever, people don't understand that you can get addicted to food.
No. And in fact, I think food addictions are the most brutal because you can't, like, I know I can't drink safely. So mm-hmm. I can choose to be abstinent from alcohol. I can't choose, like, and food is not my primary, you know, issue. It is one of the issues that has always, it was at a certain point in my life, but not for a very long time, but it's still there. But if it is your primary issue or even just mm-hmm. a really big issue for you, you can't not eat. Like you have to develop some sort of relationship with food in a way that I would never be able to with alcohol.
No, and that is such a great point. It's like, we practice abstinence from drugs and alcohol, you know, but we can't practice abstinence from food. It's impossible to do that. So you know, it would be like you and me, like forcing ourselves to have a healthy relationship with alcohol.
Yeah. We can't do that.
So it's like, this is real. Like if you're listening and you are struggling with disordered eating or food addiction, exercise addiction, like it is real. It is absolutely a real thing, no matter if someone's trying to gaslight you.
No, and it's that brain chemistry thing too, like where you're getting that hit. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. It is not just like, you know, an unhealthy fascination with it or an unhealthy obsession with it. Like you can, you know, I mean, there's transfer addictions that we've talked about many times mm-hmm. and it can be like that. But if it's your primary, it is really, really difficult.
It is. And like you said, it's something that you've struggled with, you know, since childhood, and it's coming up again more strong, like in a stronger way through the pandemic, which totally makes sense because we're at home with what's in our cabinets and
right.
with not a lot to do. And while we are grateful and fortunate to have homes and to be safe and, you know, now we're vaccinated, there's still a lot of anxiety about
What do you do to manage your, like, for me with the food, when I start getting like this, I'm at least, I've done the work where I can go, I see what I'm doing right here. Like, I see when I'm like pulling back and I say, okay, you know, what's really going on? What am I stressed out about? And, mm-hmm. you know, there's various things for everybody. And because I look at myself objectively and I say, I'm hungry. I'm not, you know, that I should not be restricting myself on this, you know, why am I doing it? And I'm able to sort of dig in and I can, you know, better address it that way. Like there are times when I've said, I'm not going to have dessert. And then I go, well, mm-hmm. wait a minute, why am I doing that? What am I doing to myself? and am I hungry and do I want it? And then I'm able to go, okay, yeah, I want it, need it. Like I use that kind of tool. And also it's a big heads up to look deeper at what's bothering me on other fronts. And that helps me deal with it. Like what do you do when you know you're exercising in an unhealthy way? Or when you think about those three pieces of chocolate and you say to yourself,
yeah,
I got to go work out tomorrow. What do you do? How do you?
I mean, so I'm not a restrictor. So I come from it as like, and I'm definitely more of like a salty food. Like it's like when I'm PMSing, I'm like, give me all of the chocolate. But like the other 3 weeks of the month, I will eat a whole bag of Goldfish. Or like a whole box of Wheat Thins. Like I just want.
Yeah, we've done that together.
Yes, exactly.
With the pretzel.
But it's like,
yeah.
So it's like, I tell myself, like, I try to give myself grace.
That's
honestly
exactly what I'm trying to get to.
I'm just like, you ate a bag of Goldfish while you were watching The Office.
Get over
yourself. You didn't drink.
Well, like, yes.
You know, like it's not that big of a deal.
If it's not booze and it's not drugs, it's good.
Yeah, like
for me,
it's not that big of a deal. And then, so then I go into like that's where the unhealthy clicks in of like, you'll just go for a run tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not, so is that unhealthy or is it like, is that what motivates me to run three times a week? I don't know the answer to
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
But, you know, we just, in our household, my partner and I are, you know, we exercise frequently, we cook a lot of healthy foods, and we order Wingstop once a week, and we eat desserts, you know, so we try to practice balance with food here, and like, you know, if we have like Wingstop at night, we'll be like, all right, we're having a salad and doing yoga tomorrow night.
Okay.
So you know, I don't know if that's the correct answer,
but that's a healthy thing. That's saying like, there's nothing wrong with eating Wingstop, which is true. And saying, but I'm not going to be eating Wingstop every night. Tomorrow we're going to have a salad. And tomorrow we didn't do any physical activity today. Tomorrow we'll go for, you know, do yoga, you know, like that is a healthy kind of thing, a way to approach it. You know, it's good to, I guess, you know, that point, what you said about grace to me is so important on this front, because this goes into that whole issue of when we are so much harder on ourselves than we would be on another person. Like when I look at myself, like, and there's this meditation thing where like you're meditating and you sort of, I learned about this from Beat Simkin, that you can picture yourself instead of like just being in your whatever, picture yourself almost like hovering over yourself on the ceiling and looking down. You know, what would I say to that woman who is, you know, is still hungry, wants dessert, but it's going, no, I can't. I don't, you know, I'm going to control that, or I'm not going to do that. I would look down at her and say, eat the dessert. What's wrong with you? Like,
yeah,
do it. Anybody who asked me that question, is it okay to eat dessert when I'm still hungry? And, you know, I'm not over the edge on eating desserts all the time. I'd be like, eat the dessert. What? Of course. Of course.
Yeah,
but we are so much harder on ourselves, and it's a bat we use to beat ourselves up.
This conversation, I know it's a bit early to go into our music minute, but
this is reminding me
of two songs. One is Anna's Song by Silverchair.
I don't know that. I know that. The lead singer of Silverchair. Yeah,
the lead singer of Silverchair is a man who openly struggles with anorexia.
That's right.
You know, this song came out in like early 2000s, late 90s, which is like very ahead of its time to have a song about an eating disorder, let alone a man singing a song about an eating disorder.
I remember that.
So
yeah.
That was like, that's a great song. And then also, oh my gosh, it's a Halsey song. Nightmare, where that it came out like 2 years ago, and she has a line where she talks about how she looks in the mirror and she wishes she grabs her stomach and wishes she could cut it off with scissors. And like, as graphic and horrible as that is, I've totally had those feelings where I'm like, I've grabbed a part of my body and been like, oh my God, everything would be perfect if this was gone.
Yeah. Oh, I feel that too. Totally.
And it's like, that's not real. But to hear that in a song, to hear Halsey, you know, someone who we look at who's just like stunning.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, if Halsey feels this way, that makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah. And it's funny because like you don't, when I think about just you open that whole door on the music thing, because like one of the things that I most connect with in music is songs about addiction, right? And recovery. Like there are so many songs that we've talked about a million times on here, like about addiction and recovery that, you know, make me feel less alone, make me feel seen, make me, you know, grateful for moving past that. But, you know, that food issue, people, we don't talk about it. It really is something, particularly for men. It is something that we don't, I don't have anything to go to on those other things. I mean, there are, in music, you can, you know, hear about all kinds of different, you know, like traumatic relationships, traumatic situations, drugs, all of that, you know, and all kinds of things we experience, not just substances, but things we experience in life. And there's like remarkably little about anything to do with food.
Totally. And that's, I was, you know, thinking, it was like, what's our music minute going to be? Because there's not a lot of songs about this. But while we were talking, it made me think of that. And, you know, it's the way that marketing is designed these days is like, it's designed for us to feel like shit about ourselves, you know?
Totally, yeah, of
course. Know, even though there is a big push for, you know, body positivity, body neutrality, more inclusive types of bodies that are seen, which is huge. And like, obviously so grateful for that. There's also, we are just inundated with and marketed tools to change how we look, like for all genders where, you know, like on my Instagram, I'm targeted Botox, weight loss pills, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then I look at my partner's Instagram and he's targeted like gain mass, how to gain 20 pounds of muscle in 5 minutes.
Oh,
and I'm
God.
Like, okay, this makes me feel better because you're being targeted too.
Wow. It's so true though. It is so true. It's, and the other, you know, we can just everywhere you go on social media, it's just a lot of people doing different kind of workouts and posting their pics and all this pushing for it. And,
like,
you know,
before and after pictures,
I was just gonna say these transformations, like, you know, it makes it, social media is the worst place to ever, you know, try to get some peace on this kind of subject, on any kind of subject, really. I mean, it's all, it, you know, it's all so curated and illusional.
It is. And there was this woman who went viral a couple years ago. She was a personal trainer and she posted a picture of a before and after, but it was a very different way to do it, where she posted before having children and like being a fitness professional, and then like after having three kids and what her body looks like now. And it was just such a breath of fresh air of like, you know, seeing, but she was happy. She has her kids. She has a great career and she doesn't have a six pack anymore, but she's like, because her body created these three humans, like, and it's like, it was just like such a reminder of there's so much more than what we look like.
Yeah.
Even though we're told what we're supposed to look like, especially women, or like since we were little girls, we're told what we're supposed to look like, to see that like it's okay to have cellulite and stretch marks and
Oh yeah.
Wrinkles, like like my aunt always tells me aging is a privilege. So like I think about that when I start to see like my crow's feet coming in. I'm like, yep, I'm allowed to get older because I'm not dying. So this is great.
It is so true. And I do have to say, like, I have, you know, in February I turned 55. And while I don't feel 55, although I don't know what any age is supposed to feel like my body looks, you know, like a 55-year-old woman's, like in, you know, there's, and I had always been terrified of the idea of like, what's gonna, you know, how am I gonna feel when like my knees start looking like my mom's and there's like, you know, and it's like wrinkly or, you know, as your boobs sag as you get older and all of that. I remember always thinking like, not even just like in clothes, but like looking at myself naked in a mirror and going, that is a 55-year-old body. And I am remarkably good with it. I don't know if it's because I thought I'd be dead at 40. I don't know if it's because, you know, I try to be in a healthier place and I treat myself better and I like myself more just in general. Mm-hmm. Like I have had, you know, a much better experience in body acceptance in my 50s than I ever did in my 30s. Like now it's like, you know what? It is what it is. And it's okay. Like I put 2 feet on the floor today and that's, you know, always the biggest deal. So
that's such a good reminder.
And I would have never thought like at your age, if someone had said to me, how are you going to feel about your body when you're 55? I'd have been like, oh, I cannot even imagine. And now I'm like shocked. I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. This is what it looks like. Yeah, there's wrinkles. Yeah, there's cellulite. Yeah, you know, my boobs don't look like they did when I was in my 20s. I didn't have kids, but I still accept, you know, I'm still fine with my body. It's mine.
Yeah.
And I think just owning who we are and liking ourselves better than we, you know, ever realized we might, it has made a big difference.
I think like what you just said about like, I like myself more now is huge.
Yeah. And that comes like with recovery. Yeah.
That's like, that came with recovery, you know, therapy, support groups.
Yeah.
Like,
work.
You know,
work,
you're in the work. You've been in the work for 17 years now. You know, like that's, it is a lot of work. And it's not like there is no like, there's no like quick pill to take.
No, there's no finish line. It's just showing up each day. Yeah.
Ugh.
You will love yourself at 55. You'll be like, this body, awesome. I'll take it. I'm standing up straight. That's great. So, well, I think this, you know, if anybody's got thoughts, is struggling, like feeling whatever they're feeling on food, we are with you. We want to hear from you. Let us know. It is, you know, like Tawny was just saying, you know, it's a process that we all go through on all these fronts, food, shopping, you know, gambling, whatever, all these things that we can transfer our addictions to or transfer our, you know, kind of need to control or feelings like we need to control. And thanks in so much part to social media, unfortunately, you know, feel like we're never good enough. And, you know, just like we say, there's like no perfect in a pandemic. There's no perfect period. Like there is no perfect. So there's just.
Except for Harry Styles.
Oh, yeah. Well, Harry Styles, in fact, is perfect. And with that, we will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. And you can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.